The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Greetings, everybody. Time for another edition of Everything You Need to Know. Kip Kiefer back in Birmingham. After a tough week, I appreciate everybody's support. I've gotten a lot of really nice notes and supporting materials from so many of you and people really all over the country. It's very humbling that people show that kind of concern. I appreciate you indulging me last week here on the show, talking about that experience of my mother's passing. And of course, when we recorded last week, it was still about 48 hours away, but she did leave this world last Wednesday and is definitely transitioned into a much better place. The ravages of Alzheimer's is terrible to behold, and I don't wish it upon any of you or any of your relatives or loved ones. It's just a terrible thing. And as we talked about last week, maybe I was lashing out a little bit. I was talking about the healthcare industry and more the medical research industry. Everything's about the dollars, and that's going to be part of the theme of today's show, of course. But I don't doubt the work of, I'm sure, many dedicated people, but let's, instead of just spending so much time begging for funding, let's actually get some things done here and start making some advancements in some of these areas. Again, not suggesting that it's indifference or ineptitude, but it would be a lot better for the business of fundraising for all of these different things. And being a late night kind of person, if you watch late night television, every break is four or five different organizations just imploring you to send them some money. And, as I said last week, you wonder how much of that is actually going to what they're asking for. So maybe it's a little bit of a cynical attitude, having just gone through this situation. But let's have some breakthroughs, and then I think you will see funding really improve, because if there's some results in all of this, then perhaps the enthusiasm for people to give will be a lot greater. Anyway, thank you again for indulging me in all of that. I hope we had some information last week about the healthcare system and what is paid for and not paid for by insurance was helpful to some people. Be prepared, folks, because you never know what's down the road. I've never been a save for a rainy day kind of guy, but I think this has changed my perception a little bit from the preemptive standpoint of anticipating things that you might run into down the road and taking steps to possibly help negate those things if they come to pass. I want to talk about today one of my favorite things throughout my lifetime, and it's just kind of a silly little sidebar, but I've always loved the concept and the pretty much, I'm not going to say all of them because there's been some bummers in the series, but I love James Bond movies. Of course, James Bond is the fictional character created by author Ian Fleming, who was a writer and journalist in Great Britain in the 1940s during World War II. He worked closely with MI6, which is the British equivalent to the CIA. And he created this character, James Bond, out of amalgam of a lot of people that he got to know, that he worked with, that he had experience with, and what they did behind the scenes in the intelligence and spy network, I guess is a good way to call it. Ian Fleming himself characterized James Bond much after his own image of different things he liked, cars he liked, drinks he liked, the way he liked to dress, the way he kind of imagined a perfect self of him he cast into the character of James Bond. And those novels, and a lot of, I was surprised the other day talking to somebody, mentioned James Bond, and he said something about the movies. And I said, well, the books are phenomenal. And he says, there's books? I said, yeah, Ian Fleming wrote almost 30 James Bond novels, and they're just great reads. If you haven't read them, go back. And it really brings you up to like the whole post-World War II Cold War situation. And a lot of the Bond movies, of course, are Hollywoodized. Or in this case, most of those are shot at various locations, but they are certainly styled to be more mainstream, don't have the intricate details that a Fleming novel has, but they're fascinating reads. And look at the James Bond series. The first James Bond movie came out in 1963, and a lot of people will tell you it was Goldfinger. That's wrong. Dr. No was the very first James Bond movie put to film, and it really kicked off a series that continues to this day. This will be this year the 60th anniversary of James Bond movies. I don't know how many there are now. It's in the high 20s, 26 or 27 of them. But what other series? Go back and think about this. What other series has been in existence now for 60 years, and we've had a bunch of great Bonds, some not so good. Sean Connery, of course, the very original James Bond, just the prototype. Could not have gotten a better actor, a more perfect guy for that role. I just happened to see the James Bond movie from 1965, From Russia with Love, which, by the way, the novel From Rush With Love was listed on John F. Kennedy's list of his favorite books of all time. And I would say that President Kennedy was a pretty well-read individual and author himself. So From Russia With Love was Sean Connery's, I think, one of his best acting performances. But he was in a variety of movies before. He just kind of got burned out over it and left the series in a contract dispute. They brought in a guy named George Lazenby for one movie that was just terrible because he was the worst cast James Bond ever. And then went to, of course, back to Connery for one more, Diamonds Are Forever, which now that I spend a lot of time in Las Vegas, where my son Case is the sports editor of the Las Vegas Sun, and my new grandson King is a resident. He's Vegas born. I've been fortunate enough throughout my career in the gaming business, and now with them based there, to spend a lot of time. It is so much fun to go back and watch the 1967 movie Diamonds Are Forever and see what Las Vegas looked like compared to what it is now. Wow, that is something that's just astounding to behold. So anyway, I don't want to make this totally a story of James Bond movies, but the evolution went on to Roger Moore's era, which a lot of those were kind of tricked up and sensationalized and not the greatest era for Bond fans, in my opinion, although there were a couple of pretty solid efforts, and Roger Moore was a credible James Bond. Then, of course, we went to Timothy Dalton, who was really kind of not cultured enough, a little bit too rough for the role, I thought. It went on to Pierce Brosnan, who was just the opposite. He was over-polished for the role. Never really was able to buy Pierce Brosnan as a tough guy, because James Bond at his core was a pretty bad alley cat. But Pierce Brosnan was an entertaining James Bond, and the Brosnan movies, I thought, were good. And, of course, now in this late stage of Bond movies, we just had a good era of Daniel Craig, who was a very good Bond. At first, he was controversial because he's basically blonde-headed, and there can't be a blonde James Bond. Well, now that Daniel Craig's had enough, they are talking about all kinds of different options, even getting away from the person even having to be British, talking about women and talking about a gay James Bond. Or, of course, we're in the diversity era, so there's no telling what we're going to have when the next Bond movie comes to pass. But anyway, a long history for me of watching those. I tell you this because in 1961, Fleming wrote a novel called Thunderball, which of course was made into a Sean Connery James Bond movie. They got away from the story a little bit, but in that 61 movie Thunder or 61 novel Thunderball, Fleming first introduces a organization that becomes the real burr in the saddle of James Bond, who is always involved in the subsequent series of books and in films. And the name of the organization was Spectre, S-P-E-C-T-R-E, Spectre, the Special Executive for Counterintelligence, Terrorism, Revenge, Extortion. That was the name of the outfit, Spectre. There's a great moment I just told you about for Russia with Love where Bond steals a Lector, which is a decoding machine in the early 60s, from the Russian consulate in Istanbul, getting the assistance of a beautiful young woman, of course, who works there, who has actually been set up to lure him in. And it's the whole movie is set up to be sort of a for Bond and the antagonist in where the was the Russians in Cold War era. As it turns out, Bond finally comes up to the revelation at the end when he's face to face with being shot by an assassin, that he looks at him and says, "Wait a minute, Spectre, of course." He realizes that, and he says, "You've just been playing us against the Russians all along." So Spectre is this kind of shady, shadowy crime organization that is up to no good, again, trying to control much of the world and its wealth. The Spectre organization is, of course, fictional, but I think a lot of people need to wake up and realize that the modern day Spectre is alive and well in our world. And I'm going to think of a clever acronym sometime soon here, my new letters for this group, because I'm going to tell you, we're going to work on, let's do kind of a quick overview of a possible 2023 James Bond film that I would like to call The Great Reset. You know, we can start off like always, and have James Bond walking across the screen, whatever the current characterization of James Bond is going to be. And of course, he turns and fires at the big eyeball that surrounds the area. But anyway, the modern day Bond will have to battle this new brilliant criminal organization. And like all Bond movies, it's not just all about the good guys. You learn a lot of the motives and what's happening with the bad guys. And I think for our verbal kind of run through on our screenplay here, we need to identify those. The bad guys are pretty simple here, I think, to point out who's exactly pulling the strings and pushing the levers and all of the mechanisms behind the scenes. And I think a good place to start, we just talked about a couple of weeks ago in Davos, Switzerland, you had all these European elites who, if you missed that program, I'm sorry, because I think I did a good job of laying out just who these people are, and more importantly, who they think they are. These are the elitist descendants from years, from centuries past, when Europe actually did control the entire globe. And these families amassed fortunes. They were not only the richest, most influential people, they were also the monarchs of all these European countries. And one of the most staggering things that I don't think most people realize is just one or two families basically controlled the kingdoms of each of these countries. They were all relatives. They were sometimes siblings, oftentimes cousins, nephews, nieces. This was an incestuous dominating period for just a couple of, you know, families that had the right ties and the claims to the thrones in these various places. In fact, interestingly enough, I thought it was, you heard a lot about Queen Elizabeth when she passed away. Queen Elizabeth was when the Soviet Union was melting down under Mikhail Gorbachev. This fascinates me that Queen Elizabeth, in negotiations with Gorbachev for assistance for that dwindling empire, told Gorbachev, "We're not going to have any more discussions unless you finally do the right thing by my family members. The Tsar of Russia, Nicholas, and his family were executed in the basement of a remote castle before the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917. And these people were related to the Windsor family, the rulers of England. And she says, until the remains and the real story of what happened to my relatives is presented to me, we will have no further discussions of any cooperation. There's a blatant example of exactly what I'm talking about. So that's a place to start. These are the bad guys. And a lot of times in Bond movies, those are the bad guys. It is a lot of these old European guys with resentments that go all the way back in the centuries or World War II, or their family was wronged. A lot of times, if you look, watch the villains that Fleming develops, those are the ones, and I still think they're very much part of the picture now. But they have some help these days, because you've also got not only those types, and George Soros is one. He's an Austrian who, of course, has used his fortune from hedge funding and basically short-selling a lot of stock that he had an inclination that was going to struggle, and made billions of dollars from it. That inclination, of course, almost always comes from insider trading or having a lot of knowledge. But George Soros is kind of the poster boy for that group I'm talking about. But there's also others. You've got, amazingly, in these circles, and it's hard to believe that this was a part of the villain lineup, but the Chinese Communist Party is certainly very front and center in this particular Bond thriller, The Great Reset, because they fancy themselves as the rightful rulers and controllers of the world's economy and societal structure. You'll hear people go back and read a little bit about some of these Euros. Klaus Schwab, who we introduced you to a couple of shows ago, the head of the World Economic Forum, the Davos gathering in Switzerland. Klaus has praised China for its education and indoctrination of its people and the way that they can control such massive amounts of folks and manage their country so successfully. But there's one caveat to that. These people have no liberty or freedom or choices in a lot of situations. They're even limited to how many children they can have. If that's the great example of, you know, to be admired of a society and how it's working, I don't want any part of that. So you've got these unlikely bedfellows, and you might scratch your head and say, well, how does the Chinese Communist Party get in league with European elites? Well, there's two simple words that explain the link that started this whole chain of madness. And those two words are United Nations. The Chinese, if you look back about 25 years ago, all of a sudden went from isolationism, where they had nothing to do with the rest of the world, did not let anybody know what was happening in their country. All of a sudden, they stepped out and became involved in all these different bureaus and committees and different agencies, offshoots of the United Nations. The principal example is the World Health Organization, that they had stepped up and started to fund and really influentially gained control of that organization. So when the great pandemic hit back in 2020, the World Health Organization was basically the propaganda branch for the CCP, saying nothing to see here. We've got this contained. There's no evidence that this disease is transmitted from person to person. The World Health Organization actually said that just a month before so much of the world was heavily infected. Travel was cut off in China internally, but you could jump on a plane and go anywhere in the world, despite this out of control pandemic ravaging their country. So that's a good example. And unlike James Bond movies, you don't have probably this secret meeting room with electronic doors opening and closing, where all of these delegates from all of these walks of life kind of access and come in to get an update and budget analysis and a plan. It's not that kind of deal. These are situations that emanate most of the time from conversations of things that, you know, maybe we've got in common that we can talk about, different ideas of, you know, and this was in the back of the Chinese folks' mind when they did come out of isolationism and get involved. They started engaging in all of these different situations because a lot of the United Nations different agencies are controlled by European interests. And of course, the Swiss are always involved. The Swiss, Switzerland is the America, is not America, is the world's switching station. If you want to get anything going with any person in the world, whether they're criminals or government officials or huge business people, that's the place to go. Go knock on the door in Switzerland, and they bring folks together a lot better than the phone company's old ads used to tell you. The Swiss are the masters at bringing people to the table with common interests. Of course, the other ones that was easy to recruit was profiteering gigantic corporations, big tech, pharmaceuticals, weapons manufacturers, all of these people that really stood to profit with everything going on in the world. So here's your insidious lineup. And all of those people have the commonality of having access and having their representatives always in these world-oriented bureaus and agencies that are supposedly doing good, but really are great conduits for having discussions on the number one objective, the Great Reset. When you heard Klaus Schwab say in 2020, well, maybe this COVID-19 will have a silver lining and be the beginning of the Great Reset. He mentioned it again in this year's conference when he said, we need to be master of the future. That was the theme for this year's conference. These people want control. And guess what? The biggest stumbling block of that control absolutely is. It is the United States of America. The experiment of government of the people, by the people, for the people, individual liberty, the whole dastardly experiment in these people's minds that this country being free and strong and independent and economically dominant, that had to stop. That was the big fly in the ointment. That was the big obstruction on the path. It had to be cleared away. And the plot of our screenplay is pretty simple to trace. It is methodically, it's not something that's going to happen overnight, but this has been going on for a long, long time. And you can see so many of the things that's been done that has really brought us to the point where we are. One of the big ones that they accomplished in 1980 was making the Department of Education, which had been just basically a gatherer of statistics for 120 years in the Carter administration in 1980, right before he was displaced by Ronald Reagan. They managed to get it passed through both the House and Senate, the creation of a cabinet level post, Department of Education, where, unlike the founders' wishes, education was supposed to be local and state, and now the federal government had their hand in the pie and started making policy. And look at the situation now, 40 years later, what's happened. Education has diminished considerably. Teachers' unions, which have been infested by all these politically oriented people, just like so many of our institutions, don't give a happy you-know-what about the education of children. They use their power and influence and money as a major union to dictate policy. I mean, we've reached the point where education is considered their, you know, right, not that of parents, to have any say in what their own children do. Remember a couple of years ago in Virginia, when parents protested the curriculums in the schools, they were stamped by the, in a letter to the Department of Justice, the current director, or the current cabinet member, Miguel Cardona, who is the head of the Department of Education, penned a letter to the Department of Justice and called these parents who were concerned for the education of their children and the indoctrination of those children. This is right out of the Chinese playbook. He referred to them as domestic terrorists that the federal government better get under control. If that doesn't wake you up, I don't know what will. So that was one of their great gets, picking up the Department of Education, getting the federal government involved in something that they should have absolutely no involvement in. And look at the how bad. I just saw some more test results. There's an entire school district, I believe it's in California, where not a single child was up to standards in reading levels for their particular grade level. There's no emphasis now on giving an education. It is teaching students that America is evil, America's concept was flawed, and that it's their responsibility to grow up and, you know, make these changes, become woke, for lack of a better term. I hate that term, because if that segment of our population is woke, then other Americans better wake up, because our country right now is going by the wayside. And that's really the other really insidious part of this as we run toward the end of the show here. Every time, unfortunately, because another enlisted party in this is leadership in the Democrat Party, and I've told you a million times, this is not on this show about Republican Democrat. It is so much more involved and so many more layers than that. But the Democrat Party has seized upon the opportunity with the modern day specter to go ahead and compromise some of their situations for the wealth that they provide and for the opportunity to parlay that into winning elections and maintaining power and control. So every time you vote for a Democrat candidate, and it might be a good old boy that you've known all your life or your family's always voted Democrat, the insidious thing about all of this is, because of that kind of unholy affiliation with this globalist group that really wants to destroy our country, you are signing on and entering the tent, the giant big top of all of these international conspirators, a lot of other people that want open borders. Americans are never going to compromise at the end of the day. That's why we have worldwide recruiting and millions of people are coming into this country with absolutely no legal authority to do so. They've all got cell phones. They've been flown from all over the world. They're bused to the border. These aren't people staggering from desperate situations. They're people that are being lured here and recruited to come and create a brand new voting block, be fruitful and multiply, because this, again, is not an overnight thing. This is a long-range plan to knock the biggest obstacle to this globalist, elitist. We should be making the decisions for everyone. And the only price for you, the American people, is taking away your liberty and freedom. So I think there's some important facts here in our James Bond screenplay that we're going to be putting together. But that is what I really wanted to convey today, that Americans better wake up or it's going to be too late. And I have two quick theories on why we're not seeing more Americans not rise up. One, many of them just don't even know or realize what's happening, because I've had people say, I don't pay any attention to politics. Well, this isn't politics. This is the structure of our country. And, you know, I don't care how involved in the vacuum of your own life you are. This is something that every American needs to be educated on and needs to be aware of. And the second thing is, ones who are, many just kind of shrug their shoulders like, well, what can I do about it? It's like an indifference. It's almost like a subservience, an acquiescence to, you know, whatever will be, will be. Well, good for Doris Day telling us que sera, sera. But the American people had better rise up and say, you know what? This is not the direction we're going to go, and we are not going to take this lying down. That's about all the time we have for this week's edition. I hope we had a few thought-provoking ideas today that'll give you some perspective as we move forward. I'm Kip Kiefer. We are here every week and honored to be on TKR and Spotify with Need to Know. Would love to have your comments on our shows whenever you have the opportunity to convey those. We've got a Facebook page, Need to Know, that you can get in touch with us on, or simply contact Tony Curry Radio. I'm Kip Kiefer. Thank you all for listening. We will be back with you again next week, right here, with everything you need to know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.